Hello and welcome to part two of our podcast, where we're looking at the situation facing the Christians of Iraq. Well, a question that I don't want to appear naive, so pull me into line if it sounds that way. If we were to say generally that most Iraqi Muslims, whichever persuasion, and most Iraqi Christians can live and get on side by side, how do we curb the strong voices, the authoritarian groups, the separatist groups, I suppose? How do we ensure that the people can live side by side irrespective of their faith?
Well, that's the £60,000 question, isn't it, James, which applies to Iraq as much as it applies to the region and far, far beyond the region to the whole world. Wherever you look, there are conflict situations. There are always minorities, small numbers of people of no matter what political persuasion or ideology who make life a misery for the majority of the people who just want to get on with their lives and live next to each other. And this, in a sense, for me, is a political reality. I mean, what's happening in Iraq at the moment is not necessarily a religious war. There is no religious war in the sense that we understand a religious war if we go back into the pages of our history by one or two centuries. Today, the reality is that what is happening in Iraq and other parts of the region or the world is that there is a political fight, and that political fight is manifesting itself in religious terms. So for those people to live together, and the majority of Iraqis, be they Christian or Muslim, would be very happy to live together if only the political circumstances and the politicians would leave them to live peacefully together and would give up a little bit on their own power craze and power plays. And that would help a lot in bringing security back into the country. But Iraq is a country where so many different wars are being played out by proxy, whether it's by the West, whether it's by Iran, whether it's by other countries, and therefore who pays the price? The price always, and almost always, let me say, is paid by the ordinary average person. And in Iraq, those ordinary average people are Muslims and Christians who would otherwise be able to live together quite well. And unfortunately, at the moment, they're not. So for me, I hope that the reality of Iraq, just as the reality of the other parts of the Middle East for Christians, remains at the forefront of our prayers, because they need our solidarity, they need our prayers, they need our support in whichever small or big way we can support them. Here at the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, perhaps we can do much bolder initiatives, but any ordinary human being listening to this podcast would, in their prayers, writing to their MPs, or whichever way, can actually support those Christians, if only by letting others in the country know that there are local indigenous Arab Christians there who are bearing the cross, and that that cross will ultimately lead to the resurrection.
And isn't that one of the strengths, really, of our faith, in the fact that it's a visible witness? We do have a structure. There are bishops, priests, communities, parish communities sticking together in amongst this very, very difficult situation.
Oh, very much so. Very much so, James. I agree with you entirely, in the sense that those structures are there and they are visible structures, and those structures should be supported and should be strengthened. And this is what the Bishops' Conference does, as well as other churches across the UK and the world. And for me, for instance, one of the things I'm looking forward to is the Synod on the Christians of the Middle East that is being convened by the Holy Father, by Pope Benedict XVI in Rome in October of this year, where the whole Synod is going to examine the reality, the presence, and the circumstances of Christians across the whole Middle East. Where are they? What is their present reality? And where are they going forward in the future? I personally, having lived in the Middle East, knowing the Middle East quite well, as I said earlier on, I was joking with you when I said I straddle a bit east and west. I've been fortunate enough to live half my life in the Middle East and half my life in the West, so I pretend to understand both, or misunderstand both, if you want. And in a sense, for me, I'm convinced that the majority of Muslims and Christians could live well together if only they were allowed to live together. And that sense of coexistence is something that a lot of people work for, sing for, strive for, and struggle for.
Now, you know, I've got a thing about talking shops, and I just wonder, we talked about this with the Kairos document, whether it might lead to more open recognition of the plight of Palestinian Christians. Mm-hmm. With regard to the Synod for the Middle East in Rome later this year, do you think that will lead to a greater understanding of the plight of Iraqi Christians in amongst the mix?
I think it would. I'm very optimistic that it would. I mean, you're absolutely right. We've spoken about the Kairos document in relation to Palestinian Christians. Today we're talking very briefly about Iraqi Christians. I think the Synod in Rome in October of this year, and I do hope that you and I will have an opportunity to do another podcast to analyze a little bit this Synod. I'm fortunate enough, I hope, to be attending the Synod, so I will be there with other members of the Bishops' Conference in Rome, so we can bring a little bit of the reality of what happened there. But the more you talk about the Christians of the Middle East, the more you raise the awareness of the people politically, socially, demographically, faith-based, on their reality there, the more people take it into account, not only in terms of praying for them and supporting them, but even the powers, the rulers, the politicians of the region, when they see that those people have the solidarity, the backing, the concern of a wider universal fellowship, which is what the One Christian Church is supposed to be all about, in theory at least, then in that sense, that actually puts the pressure on the politicians to consider those Christians and not to dismiss them as an insignificant small number, that they've got much bigger fish to fry or much more serious issues to contend with, and therefore this can sort of be put on a back shelf. No, it shouldn't be put on a back burner. It should be discussed because they are an important and indivisible part of the reality of the Middle East region.
Well, next time round, Harry, we'll take a closer look at the Synod in autumn 2010. But you've been very moved, haven't you, recently by a piece of music you picked up in Lebanon. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, it's a beautiful piece. I really, really am moved. I cannot tell you, James, how many times I put it in the CD drive of my laptop when I'm working and put my headphones on and just listen to it. And every time I listen to it, every time I'm even moved more by it. It's just a small piece that is sung by a Lebanese Christian, I think, though I'm not sure, that she's Maronite Catholic. Her name is Tania Cassis, and the name of the song she sings herself is called the Islamo-Christian Ave, which is based on Caccini's Ave Maria. But that in itself is not so moving. What is moving is that this song has her singing the Ave interlaced or interlinked with the muezzin from the mosque who is also doing the Muslim prayer. And those two are coming together. And for me, if anything shows the conviviality that the Middle East seeks to nourish and support, which is Christian-Muslim dialogue, Christian-Muslim coexistence, and in the case of Israel-Palestine, Christian-Muslim-Jewish coexistence and dialogue, then this piece does it. And in Arabic, it's beautiful because those listeners or readers of yours who know a bit of Arabic, the title is As-Salatul Islamiyya al-Masihiyya, the Muslim Christian prayer. And what nicer prayer than to find two Abrahamic traditions, which are not necessarily the same. We know that we say a common forefather Abraham, but we have our own different ways of looking at this patriarch. But they are coming together and they're basically making this reality not only for Lebanon, but for the whole region. You would be doing me a great pleasure if you include a snippet, at least, of that CD piece on this podcast.
Well, I think that's all that remains to be said, Harry. We're going to play out with that track, that very unique and moving track. And thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, James. Allah.